Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and I'm joined by Natalie Lieberman, a licensed marriage and family therapist and a licensed clinical social worker. Natalie's been a faculty with the Jerry Grossman Seminar since 2012 and is an adjunct faculty with Pepperdine University's Graduate School of Education and Psychology since 2015. Natalie, welcome to our show today.
Thank you very much, Graham. It's great to be back.
Great to have you back. You know, with most podcasts, we typically have a specific topic and we bring on an expert. In fact, that's how I first met Natalie. She spoke with us a little while back on suicide, and we had a really educational time, very informative time. I experienced such a great, not just a good connection with Natalie, but just a real fascination with her story. She began to share some things within the context of kind of suicide and educating us about that, but she really began to kind of give us some glimpses into her life. And after the podcast, I was talking to our producer and I gave Natalie a call back and said, I would love to have you back. And to do a podcast, it's a wee bit different from what we normally do. Not so much around a topic, though part of our talk today will likely have some themes and some flavorings of resilience. But I want to talk to Natalie just simply about her life. In the suicide podcast, she talked about her upbringing, some ways her life path took her through the years following her childhood. And I wanted to bring her back to talk just about her life. So our podcast today is going to be a wee bit different. So Natalie, what I'd like to do is just kind of set up a framework for our conversation today that includes the origins and the start of your upbringing, and along the way, those incidents and those experiences you've had that have shaped who you are and who you've become. You know, there's a saying that says we are the sum total of our past experiences, and relatively that's true. We're not necessarily having to be defined by those, but those make up who we are and what we do along the way to create our identities and ourselves can be a very interesting story. And I'm so excited to hear yours today. So what I'd like to do, I'd like to say, Natalie, tell us about yourself. Where should we begin?
What an interesting and fascinating journey it's going to be. I would love to share a lot of things that had transpired in my life. Can be inspirational and can be uplifting at the same time. There has been quite a few trials and tribulations during my time. I was born in the former Soviet Union in the Republic of Ukraine. I am the oldest of three kids. When I was five, my younger sister was born. So I had been taken out of kindergarten to help my parents to help with her. My parents were very, very young when they had me. My mother just barely turned 18. My father was 22. And I can tell you that I have a 27-year-old son and a 25-year-old daughter. And looking back, they were kids having kids. And it's kind of interesting how a lot of things and a lot of perspective change as you actually grow older yourself and you have experiences. In former Soviet Union, everybody's experience was very similar. It was a very bureaucratic, very primitive ability to have your own place to live. And it's primarily after World War II. The construction were taking a long time. It would be very common for people to reside two, three generations together under the same roof. My parents have gotten divorced right before I turned 8. We didn't have a place to live, so we would find ourselves renting various apartments, and it was challenging in the sense that we would move quite a bit. At times, we would find a place, and 2 weeks later, we would be told that we needed to vacate. I primarily lived with my mother. There was a short period of time when my sister and I went to live with my dad. I owe gratitude that my mother had not forced me to change schools. So I think for me, it was very imperative for me to have a sense of normalcy and stability. Looking back, is that I had been able to really stay with my cohort of students from the time I went to school up until the time Chernobyl had happened, and we had to leave when I was 14. My childhood probably was very similar to a lot of kids that are coming from divorced families. I absolutely adored and loved my little sister. She was premature. She looked like a doll. Not only was she petite, she was the cutest thing I've ever seen. And now we have a very close relationship. And I can tell you that she actually oftentimes thought of me as her mom because I had this incredible desire and innate caring and loving. And I wouldn't change that experience for the world.
I would imagine that required you as a child. You're talking about kind of that parentified role, but it sounded like it was a very loving and almost natural role for you to come into, and one it sounds like you cherish as we talk about it.
Very, very much on point, Graham. I have been parentified, and I think I was parentified as far as I can recall. I've had an opportunity to speak to my mom on several occasions because I told her that I was raised by my grandmother, my paternal grandmother. And I think it's fair to say that my mother has taken some offense to it because her memories are different. And obviously, I was too young to remember what had happened. And the only reason why I'm convinced that I was raised by my paternal grandmother is because, once again, my parents were incredibly young. And I don't have any recollection of either of my parents up until the time I was probably about 6 years of age.
So you're going, you know, through these earlier years, and there's some significant transitions that take place. The divorce occurs, but I'm hearing things within the context of these transitions, words like gratitude and the importance of normalcy with your cohort. Even though there's trauma, you're carrying these things and kind of journeying with these things in some ways. How'd you do that?
Right on point. And I think that's exactly the reason why I ended up being in the field of psychology, because initially I was absolutely convinced that I was going to be an attorney. And through a certain chain of events, my path had been diverted and I went and I studied psychology. Unfortunately, my paternal grandmother had passed away right on the cusp when I was turning 8. And I have a lot of really fond memories about her. And I think one of my most profound trauma, developmental trauma, is that my grandmother passed away on her 60th birthday. And my parents had made a decision not to traumatize me, so they buried her without telling me. And I found out at least a month later because I overheard a conversation where it's been shared that my mom said my mother-in-law passed away. And this day had been cemented in my memory, where I was, what I was wearing, what I was doing. And I don't hold grudges against anybody, but if I had an opportunity to change anything about my life, I think my parents just did not know better how to handle it. And I think it's a big mistake when parents don't have the skills how to handle challenging and difficult events in life.
So although your parents might have been coming from kind of a protective stance, and maybe the intent was in fact good for your heart, there's something about not having that closure, the ability to say goodbye to somebody very important to you. What would have been different in your life had you been able to say goodbye, do you think?
That's a really good question. One of the things that I've learned in life is to not get stuck on what could have been. I think my parents knew that her days were limited because they took me to a hospital. And I recall to this day having a conversation with her and making a comment that her lips were very blue. And she turned and she said, "Sweetheart, you're the only person that will be honest with me." So in hindsight, I understand that they realized that something terrible might happen. So I had been able to see her, but I don't recall in relation to when she passed. I've had conversation with my parents and asking them, and I told them it was very ill handled. And I understand their reasons. I've always considered myself to be an old soul. I've never been reactive. I don't recall ever throwing a tantrum. But one thing that I can tell you, having been given an opportunity to stay with my cohort from a very, very early age, I seem to really thrive in the environment where I had been able to do things for other people. I was that organizer. I was that glue that would hold all of my classmates together. We would organize Jeopardies. We would organize different performances. I would just immerse myself in anything that has to do after the school activities. This was the ground for me to thrive.
I would imagine that some of that role that you were taking on with your cohort and within school. It sounds like that likely got developed pretty early on in your role with your youngest sister, and probably in the family as the oldest of three, to kind of organize and hold everybody together and make sure everybody's okay. So I would imagine that's kind of a natural way from a very early age for you just to kind of be in the world.
It's very true. It's very true.
From your elementary years, take us into your high school years. Talk about transitions. There's something that happened around 14 years old and Chernobyl occurring.
Chernobyl happened on April 26th. I recall waking up in the morning and really we did not know anything. So when we went to school on May 1st, there was a Russian version of Labor Day. So they're usually accompanied by huge parades. And I was part of the dancing group. And we performed, and it rained, really. There was a significant rainstorm. And later on, it was announced that everybody that got rained on were supposed to be seeking medical attention. So that had been such a shattering event that my mother had made an executive decision, and she pulled all of us out. And we actually, virtually overnight, we went and we stayed in Sochi. And we stayed in Sochi almost until the end of 1986. So I had to go and find myself not only in a different city, having to learn all of the in and outs, but also having to immerse myself, being a teenager, which is not easy, to have to find yourself surrounding with group of different people.
So the importance of that normalcy you had early on that you recognized as a very important component of your life to manage some transitions occurring, like the divorce or the passing of a grandmother. Everything's changing now in your teenagers. You're kind of starting from scratch in many ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Starting from scratch. And I also had a pretty profound language that you can hear an accent that is somebody that Russian wasn't the first language. So people would pick up on it and right away would say, where are you from?
Was that an easy component of it where people were saying, hey, there's something about you that's different? Was that... challenging, or were people welcoming?
People were welcoming. And I think that even though I don't recall ever being mistreated by my peers, and I can tell you that I've actually had a classmate in Ukraine, and my classmate was of Jewish descent. And he looked a little bit different. You could tell that he had Jewish heritage. And my maternal grandfather was Jewish. So I have, and there is a lot of trauma with his first camp family being killed in Babi Yar. I've always known that history, and it was really dear to me. And I've always been perplexed. As a young child, I recall hearing a story that you had a 21-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old daughter, and Germans come and under false pretenses take everybody and shoot them. How did this man able to pick himself up and uproot and continue to live? And continue to not just exist, but he managed to have three more children, and my mother is one of them. So I've always used it, even though I don't recall meeting him because I think I was under two when he passed away. I know what he looks like based on photographs, and I've always used him as an anchor. And it helped me to understand that whatever challenges that I might be experiencing, they're paling in comparison when my grandfather had actually had to survive.
So him as an anchor was not just about existing through something, but finding a way to continue to produce in life, to thrive in life. And you're talking about some traumas already in your life. Talk about moving through your life with this anchor. How's that been helpful?
Oh, it's been paramount. I started to transition and I lost my train of thought. So there I had a classmate and he was distinguished. He had one of those distinguished Jewish characteristics. And I recall that some of my classmates were making fun of his typical ethnic groups. And I recall being able to talk to them and to say, I don't care what anybody looks like, but this is not going to happen here. This is not a class that we're going to tolerate it. And as a group, if anybody is going to proceed with being unkind, this is going to be handled between us. And I think I must have had such a conviction that something resonated. And interestingly enough, how life works, He actually lives in San Francisco. And a couple of years ago, we've been able to connect, and he came to LA and we visited. So it's been amazing.
That's pretty nice. So that sounds like possibly one of your earliest memories around recognizing that not only am I one that brings people together and services others in very loving ways, looks to give to others, but it also sounds like this is kind of the introduction of this self that's also a peacemaker.
Peacemaker for sure.
Yeah.
Peacemaker and somebody that has the capacity perhaps to captivate people and to move them not from a position of fear, from a position of we know better and we should do better. I also want to piggyback that besides the developmental trauma, when I was 13 years of age, I developed acute appendicitis. And I was one of those children that always solved the problems on their own, and I didn't want to bother anybody. And I wasn't feeling well. And I'm grateful that my math teacher kind of spotted in me that something was off, and she sent me to see a nurse. And the nurse said, you better go home. Home was an hour and 30 minutes away by public transportation, because that's how long I would take every single day to get to school to have the consistency of being a cohort. And mind you, climbing there can be brutal during winter. So I went with my best friend to her home, and she called her mother and she said, she's not really doing too well. To make a long story short, an ambulance came and they took me to a hospital, and I had a more mature presentation and I ended up being mistaken for an adult, and they took me to an adult hospital. So the doctor comes in and the doctor says, you need surgery. Said, what do you mean I need surgery? He's like, yeah, you need surgery because you are having basically your appendix has infection. And I don't know how, but I can tell you that they've made a decision to take out my appendix with local anesthesia. I don't recommend anybody have that experience, because when you talk about trauma and when you talk about tolerating pain, I think that was one of the pivotal moments when I realized that I could take on any physical pain. And it is not a good thing to do, because if your body is able to tolerate pain, compensate in some other way. So this has been a big revelation for me that when, and I speak about it with my clients, I teach them that pain is basically a symbolism that something is off and you have to pay attention to it. And the way to deal with it is to address it and not to numb it or learn biologically to ignore it.
So speak to that idea. If things are coming up and there is pain there, whether it's physical, emotional, relational, whatever it may be, there's this idea that we get to choose how we lean into it. And ideally, you know, that's kind of when our fight or flight kicks up, where we want to kind of flee sometimes when pain is too much or anxiety too great. But we have a choice to turn and face it, whether it's losses early on, separation of within our families, whether it's having to start from scratch, whether it's trying to be the peacemaker, whether it's something physical like your appendix. These are all moments where we can choose what we're going to be doing. We can't always choose what comes at us, but we can choose how we go through it. And it sounds like there's this part of you, maybe it's going back to what I said at the beginning of our time today about this resiliency development, this resiliency building, that's one of the greatest parts of your backbone. Just kind of, that's the way you go through life. You kind of lean in and face these things. And it sounds like you do a lot of that work internally. Say more about that part.
Yes. And actually, I think that is the easiest part, because it's not possible for you to control virtually everything that happens on the outside. No. I've learned early on that anything that is going on in your life, you can choose to be bitter or you can choose to be grateful. The fact that it is your choice is incredibly, incredibly powerful, because nothing lasts forever. Whatever pain we experience, it's going to eventually cease. How we go about whether we can expedite the process, I think, is lies within us. And I also believe that what's made me different from a lot of people that I know of is that I do not hold grudges. It's not within me. Whatever negative experiences I have had, oftentimes I'm being reminded of a conversation when something bad had happened. And I'm somebody who has a pretty good memory, and it's virtually like it's been erased from my mind. I deal in life with a really great Stoic philosopher's mantra that thus too shall pass. You probably have heard that, but I think some people don't believe it. And also, amori fati, we all shall die. So this is a great reminder that you can choose in life to hold on to things that are heavy, the things that are ultimately weighing you down, versus what did I learn from this? This was a lesson I needed to learn. This was the lesson that I needed to learn to either have a better understanding of myself or better understanding of the environment. Because if I understand other people and I'm able to gain knowledge of what the environment like, I'm able to inadvertently, not just to protect myself, but I'm able to flourish and I'm able to thrive, regardless what obstacle and challenges come my way.
So how does that allow you to be in life now, in your work? You are coming alongside people in their journeys, whether it be relationship things, traumas in their past. We talked about suicide in our prior podcast together. As a MFT, as a social worker, you've got some great training. And you get the privilege of being asked to join people in their process where they may be looking at how do I get through this time. It's not that I want to lean away from this. I just don't know how to lean into it. How does your upbringing, the resilience you've gotten along the way, your ability to choose what you hold and what you let go of, as I come into your work with those that you get to sit with and help?
In my clinical experience, what I have seen is that overwhelming majority of people haven't been able to tell their story through various reasons. A lot of times it's because there is lack of acceptance. And sometimes there is such a prevalent judgment that people shut down. And I think the most important aspect of the work that we do, and it's magical if you do it right, your presence in the room is palpable. Your being authentic and real with people allows them to know, wait a minute, this might be different. And if this might be different, allow me the journey of starting to opening up. And usually it takes place in incremental steps. I also love to use analogies with people, something that is relatable, something that they understand, because we all come from different experiences. And I always tell them, it's okay to fall down. You need to fall down in life. Why do you need to do it? Because the next time you fall down, you'll know about body kinesthetics. What do you do to have a gentler, so to speak, fall? And I also tell them, you're down. Guess what you need to do? Turn around, lay on your back, put your head high, and look up. If you see up, you will be able to get up.
You get to, in the process of people finding ways to get through their life, you give them a place where their story gets to be told. And it sounds like along the way, you get to kind of normalize some of the challenges that they may go through. And actually, there are always some things that we can control despite what's going on around us. And the idea is, it sounds like you help them identify that. It also sounds like you're saying to them, either we're winning, kind of using a little bit of a sports analogy, but we're either winning or we're learning. And so if we fall down, we just learn something. And how can we incorporate that as we get back up?
I love what you just said, Graham. I think victories in life will not be sweet unless you've known what it's like to lose.
Yeah.
I think if we're only given positive experiences in life, it doesn't allow us to continue to grow and to confront things.
No.
It's okay if you lose. It's imperative that you lose. Why? Because along with the loss will come your greatest learning.
That's right.
So when that victory does come, you already know exactly what you need to do to not allow it to slip away from your hands.
That's right.
So that's the aspect that everybody's able to understand and play.
Yeah, I love that. What I love about the therapeutic process is that we often, and very frequently actually, get to reframe for folks the idea of adversity. It's an opportunity to grow. We don't encourage what we might refer to as failure. Failure is just the absence of something being successful, and in the process, we get to learn something. And the idea that in therapy, we get to normalize that, we get to right-size it, we get to validate that it's in the service of growth, we get to develop emotional muscle, we get to expand parts of ourselves, the therapeutic relationship like you're describing. You get to provide people with corrective emotional experiences that allows them to see themselves in different lights and really begin to experience some of the victories that it sounds like through your adversity in your life, victories have come.
Oh, yeah, plenty.
Yeah, yeah.
Plenty. There have been plentiful, and I'm grateful for every one of them.
And what's interesting about that is not the absence of the adversity that allows for the plentifulness of the victories. It's those victories come out of, at times, some of the adversity that we get to look at. And the thing I love about therapy as well, when we get to be brought into or even go into our own work, is that oftentimes that therapist works kind of as that spotter. And, you know, when you're building muscle or lifting weights, you have someone kind of spot you with the heavy weights. And oftentimes a therapist helps spot and kind of help hold some of the difficult weights that people are bringing in their lives. And as they begin to develop that emotional muscle, they kind of take it on themselves. And that's where that growth really takes place. I know that's what you're doing in your work with the folks that you see as well.
I do. And it's kind of interesting that you picked it up, because one of the things I do with my clients, I do an exercise. I give them an empty styrofoam cup and I ask them, is this heavy? And I have never gotten a response that it's heavy. They always say no. And then the next question I ask them, well, it's not heavy if you hold it for the next few minutes, but what happens if you hold it for an hour, a day, a month? So how long have you been holding on to things in your life? And this is a place where we're able to unpack it.
Yeah, I love that idea. Sometimes too, folks don't know how to unpack it. They don't know that they have their permission sometimes to unpack it. And I think that's one of the beauties of therapy, that we get to understand both what they're carrying. Oftentimes they don't even know. And we get to come alongside them to help them do that. You know, we are coming to a close in our time today, and I know we could keep talking with this fireside chat. You've had your coffee and I've got mine here, just enjoying our time together as always. I trust that we will have you back. I'd love just to continue the story and to talk story around what your life has been, how you bring it into your current work, the people that you work with and how they benefit from that. So I want to thank you today, Natalie, for joining us. It's been a tremendous time.
Thank you for allowing me to share my part of the journey. It's been an honor.
It's my pleasure to have you. Thank you so much. Well, folks, thank you for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.